You ever watch this guy on television?
You all were not telling the truth, and you should not be trusted.
Congressman Matt Gaetz, thank you for what you did for your country tonight.
Be offended with the Democratic whip, not House Republicans.
Like a machine, Matt Gaetz.
Welcome to Hot Takes. I'm Congressman Matt Gaetz. Let's talk about the news. Our top story today, violence in New York City, political violence, as the Jews for Trump organization led a caravan through the city. They were joined by former New York City mayor and the president's personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, met by counter-protesters and violence, people assaulting police officers, throwing eggs at police officers, engaging in taunts and chants and efforts to disrupt traffic and hurt people. This raises a serious question. Is it all preparation for after the election? These efforts to scare and intimidate and hurt people aren't coming from the right. It's coming from the radical left. And in places like New York City, are these counter-protests, are these efforts to hurt our police officers and threaten our people, an effort to gear up for an uncertain period after Donald Trump wins the Election Day vote? And in some places like Pennsylvania, they may still be trying to count additional votes. Will the radical left deploy people to the streets to continue this effort at intimidation? I certainly hope not. I'm glad people were arrested, and I hope they face the full consequences of the law. Waste, fraud, abuse, and corruption in Afghanistan. That's the story Brad Palumbo brings us at fee.org. $19 billion of waste found in the U.S. efforts in the country, and we believe that it may be a great deal more if all of the spending is analyzed. Why is it that we're willing to take money away from our fellow Americans and spend it in these godforsaken places? Why are we willing to devalue the American dollar, devalue the American experience, devalue America's impact on the world by engaging in these endless, unfocused, unconstitutional wars? The war in Afghanistan has cost the American taxpayer, each American taxpayer, about $3,000. So you have to ask yourself, over the last 19 years, would you have rather our country been in Afghanistan? Or would you rather have $3,000? I think most people would take the dough and forget about the adventurism. These areas are riddled with the type of corruption that you cannot escape from through an American nation-building experience. Just a few examples. There was a $5.2 million building that we built that has never been occupied for one day. Not one single day. We even had circumstances where people were fraudulently selling meal cards. Here's my hot take. People are willing to waste money if it's not their money. If contractors and government officials and grifters in Afghanistan believe that they can just lie and cheat and steal, they will, because it's not their country that they're stealing from, it's ours. And we allow it to happen by continuing to persist in this state of low-yield conflict with results that are not clearly definable and with outcomes that are not reasonably obtainable. Let's stop wasting the money of American taxpayers. Let's stop spilling the blood of American patriots. Let's execute on the Trump doctrine to kill the terrorists, death from above, and then return home to our great country. Dr. Fauci has called for a national mask mandate on Aaron Burnett's television program. Take a listen.
You think this is a good idea? Is this what a president of the United States would be helpful if they were doing, fighting for mask mandates?
Well, you know, one of the issues that people that talk about mandating not be a good idea, because then they'll say they have to enforce it, and there's going to be a difficulty enforcing it. But if everyone agrees that this is something that's important, and they mandate it, and everybody pulls together and say, you know, we're going to mandate it, but let's just do it. I think that would be a great idea to have everybody do it uniformly. One of the issues, though, I get the argument, say, well, if you mandate a mask, then you're going to have to enforce it, and that'll create more of a problem. Well, if people are not wearing masks, then maybe we should be mandating it.
Here's my hot take. A mask mandate at the national, state, or local level will only build resentment between public health officials and the people that are in this country, the populace. Folks want to make this decision for themselves, and different states, different communities are seeing different experiences and interactions and transmission rates with this virus. If folks are outside in a really humid state like Florida, if they're not frequently having extended contact with a particular person, is there really reason for a mask mandate? Could that mask in a humid setting create other challenges for people? And I've also seen a pretty cavalier approach to how people are handling their masks. I mean, people take their masks off and throw them down on a table and then obviously are transferring a great deal of viral load to that table. I've also seen masks proven ineffective. Matter of fact, in one hospital study, we'll post it to social media as well, it was shown that cloth masks actually don't reduce the transmission of the virus at all, and in some instances have been shown to increase transmission because of the way these cloth masks were handled, transmitted, stored, and otherwise. So I think that the best mask mandate is the one the American people can give themselves. If you're going to be inside in close quarters with folks for an extended period of time, wear a mask. That's what I try to do. But if there's a circumstance that doesn't call for it, I don't think that Dr. Fauci seeking to rule all Americans from the CDC in Washington is the right answer. On October 26th, Judge Amy Coney Barrett will be confirmed as the next justice on the United States Supreme Court. Senator Lisa Murkowski indicating that she will vote to confirm Judge Amy Coney Barrett. And Judge Barrett was simply splendid in these confirmation hearings. She ran circles around the Democrats. She helped the president. And for all those who said it would be a liability to have someone who was strident in their beliefs, was certain in their legal philosophy, and was bold in their willingness to step forward and serve our country, one thing that I find particularly interesting is that October 26th, in addition to being the day that Justice Barrett will take her seat on the highest court in the land, is also Hillary Clinton's birthday. And it just makes you wonder, if Hillary Clinton had 3 appointments to the United States Supreme Court, who would she have picked? Would we have Supreme Court Justice Eric Holder, Supreme Court Justice Barack Obama, maybe even Bill Clinton himself? I don't know. But for all those Republicans who weren't comfortable with President Trump, just think about how our jurisprudence, our values, our Constitution would be reimagined, reinterpreted, maligned in some cases if Hillary Clinton had been given this power. And I think it should remind and focus Republicans for the upcoming choices that have to be made to see the impact that can occur for generations in our country with just 4 years of one presidency. I hope we extend the presidency of Donald Trump another 4 years, but I know that his legacy in reshaping the Supreme Court and in the entire federal judicial system will be a lasting one, it will be a positive one, and it will ensure that the Trump story, the Trump contribution to America, continues to be positive for a generation to come. Last night, I had the privilege to join Steve Hilton on The Next Revolution. Steve really presents this election as a choice not just between Republicans and Democrats, not just a choice between conservatives and liberals, but a choice between the establishment and the type of leadership that can challenge the assumptions in the status quo that too often have screwed Americans. Here's Steve's perspective.
I wonder if China is interfering in this election to get Biden elected. Just like the media and big tech covering up the growing evidence that Biden is compromised by our number one enemy. The media think they're helping Biden, but they're not. If Biden somehow gets elected, it is obvious that any democratic legitimacy he may have would be compromised. There is no independent journalism anymore. NBC, ABC, CBS, CNN, NPR, New York Times, Washington Post, Facebook, Twitter, all of it. Non-stop, wall-to-wall Biden propaganda. Here's another way. This unprecedented and undemocratic alliance of bias doesn't even help Biden. It just enrages people. It rallies them to vote for Trump. When you see the scale of the bias, the collusion, the entire establishment ganging up to crush Trump and his supporters, people can see what this election is all about. They're not really voting against feeble Biden. They're voting against the establishment, the media, big tech. They're voting against Zuckerberg and Dorsey. They're voting against Todd and Tapper and Brennan and Clapper. They're voting against the patronizing pomposity of the never-Trumpers, the insufferable virtue signaling of privileged Hollywood celebrities, the new woke supremacy in corporate America. That's what's become clear in the last few days. This election is about the outsider against the insiders. It is about the people against the establishment. It is a vital moment. Don't just rage against the machine, vote against it.
I agree, not just from a stylistic standpoint, but from a policy standpoint, that Joe Biden is what the establishment truly desires. Take a listen.
Look no further, Steve, than the establishment's goals. Abroad, they want foreign wars and nation building to justify endless spending and contracts for the connected. And here at home, they want illegal immigration to suppress the wages of our fellow Americans, all while seeking trade deals that justify the hollowing out of the American middle class in our towns and in our villages throughout our country so that Beijing Biden's billionaire backers can get a little bit richer. Joe Biden has backed every bad war, every bad trade deal, and he would turn our southern border with Mexico into a turnstile for the cartels, thugs, and criminals. Joe Biden isn't just the establishment's candidate. I think he's their wet dream.
I think very nicely put.
Teachers against learning. That's the story we get from Reason.com's Robbie Sove. Fairfax Teachers Union wants to close schools until August of 2021, putting out the statement, no one should return to in-person instruction until there is a widely available, scientifically proven vaccine or highly effective treatment. The petition signed by many of the Fairfax teachers says that there should be 14 days of zero community spread before in-person learning is allowed, and this as the Fairfax County School District is moving toward a limited reopening. Do these teachers not understand the developmental hindrances and deficits that will befall students if they're unable to have the option of in-person instruction? This is really one of the main questions in the election that we're facing in 8 days. Do America's parents really want to vote away their option to send their children to school? Do America's parents want to vote their children back into their living room without other options, without other tools, without the ability to ensure that the social-emotional learning and the types of learning that different students are attracted to, whether it's audio learning or visual learning or digital learning, are enhanced by the different availabilities of instruction and the different mediums of instruction? Here's my hot take. In 10 years in public service, I have never seen any teachers union lobby for more time with children. They seem to always be lobbying for less time with children. And unfortunately, the public education system in America has largely been designed for the benefits of the adults in that system, not the students. If we want to put students first, if we want to put families first, if we want to put learning, not just academic learning, but the learning that is absolutely essential that occurs in a school-based setting with young people, then we have got to have the option to open up schools. And the notion that we would delay that until August of 2021 is stone cold nuts. Would Donald Trump's election be the end of America First foreign policy? That's the question posed by Financial Times, and they cite a number of close Biden advisors who suggest that a Biden administration would be a lot more active in global politics, utilizing international institutions like the UN, NATO, the World Health Organization, the World Bank, all of these, frankly, America last organizations that screw our country, that take the money of our citizens and squander it elsewhere because if it's our money, it's simply less valued to those folks. Oftentimes, you see defeated politicians in a lot of these places in Europe who then become part of the left-wing NGOs seeking to access U.S. cash through international organizations. Joe Biden believes that the best way for the United States to engage with the world is to be the world's policeman and to be the world's piggy bank. I don't support either. I think that America is the best example to the world when she is the best version of herself. And when we invest in our people, and when we are that light of inspiration, we don't have to try to shape the world at the end of a sword, or, you know, in a conference room with a bunch of globalists who are looking to enrich themselves and enrich their fellow elites, oftentimes at the expense of their own countries. President Trump is clear. We want to put America first, and we should expect that the leaders of other countries would put their people first. And in that dynamic, that paradigm, I want the guy who wrote The Art of the Deal, who can forge better agreements, who can create better trade deals, who can lift America up, and in doing so, show the world how people can lift themselves up and fight for their own freedom and their own opportunity. That is the only way it will be lasting. Add Sudan to the list of countries making historic peace with Israel, Sudan, a country that the United States removed as one of the state sponsors of terror last week. I covered it on the podcast, and if you're a listener to the podcast, it's no surprise to see this move with Israel come next. We predicted that the prior move was a predicate decision by the United States to try to bring Sudan closer to, I think, an aligned and a productive ally. And if at least not an ally, then an entity that's not trying to wipe Israel off the map. President Trump has extended peace to places that have known only death and destruction and conflict and war, and he's done so without having to deploy tens of thousands of U.S. troops and cause all of the headache and heartache and damage that those extended deployments tend to cause among our bravest patriots. So we're grateful to see the peace. We're grateful to see Sudan reach this agreement with Israel. We hope there are many more to come. Bust out the bikinis and the board shorts, because we have found water on the sunlit portion of the moon. Previously, researchers only believed that water existed in the cold areas of the moon in a frozen state, but now H2O on the sunlit part of the moon for the first time. Doyle Rice has the story, and now there is a greater expectation that there could be, you know, life, microbes that we could find even on the moon in some state. So the findings will be published today in Nature Astronomy. I can't wait to read in greater detail. We're just getting the excerpt from USA Today, but it's always exciting to see water and light and life as a possibility. I'm a 38-year-old white guy whose baseball career was cut short due to a lack of talent. I write about it in the sports fan chapter of my book, Firebrand, and one thing I found particularly noteworthy is that in thestar.com, we get a story, sports fans are rediscovering the joy in trading cards, and these days it comes with a profit, from Alex Wong, and it chronicles how Zion Williamson, the basketball player rookie phenom, has reignited interest in trading cards, and that's even spilling over into other sports. I remember fondly collecting baseball cards, trading them with my friends, really using baseball cards to learn about batting average, math, and also valuation. You know, if you have a card of a certain value and you want to get that value in return in a trade, it was just a great way to build some valuation skills, business skills, math skills, all while enjoying the love of sports. So if baseball cards are coming back, I'm here for it. And thanks to Zion Williamson for being such a transformational talent as to reignite interest in the medium. Thanks for listening to Hot Takes. I'm Congressman Matt Gaetz. Make sure to give us that 5-star rating on Apple iTunes. You have no idea how much that helps us get our content out, make sure people aren't hearing the fake news, but they're hearing the real news and the hottest of hot takes.